Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Coral reefs around the world face a host of threats from human activities, from destructive fishing practices to pollution and, of course, climate change. Reefs in the Caribbean have been in decline for decades. Close to half of the corals on the Great Barrier Reef died during a two-year heat wave starting in 2016. And scientists have said that the vast majority of reefs could be gone by 2050. In short, there hasn't been a lot of good news about corals lately. But, and this is a big but, not all coral reefs are dying. In fact, some are thriving in temperatures and conditions that should be deadly. So far, scientists have identified only a handful of these so-called super reefs, but a new initiative aims to find, study, and protect as many super reefs as possible, because they could be key to the survival of corals globally. Anne Cohen is an associate scientist at Woods-Hole Oceanographic Institution and co-founder of the Super Reefs Initiative. Anne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Heather.
There are so many different threats facing corals. Pollution, fishing, ocean acidification is something we started hearing a lot about several years ago, that in fact carbon dioxide that we're putting into the atmosphere is absorbed by the ocean and that actually changes the acidity of the ocean. And now we're hearing that the rate at which the ocean is warming because of our greenhouse gas emissions is becoming a real threat. I mean, if you had to rank all of those different ones, and obviously it's probably different from reef to reef, but on a global level, what's the biggest threat to corals right now?
Heather, you're correct that coral reefs are facing a host of threats from many different angles. A lot of those threats are local, overfishing, pollution. Coral reefs are still being dynamited in the search for fish. But overall, the countries that host coral reefs are doing a lot better now at managing those local threats. And governments, together with conservation organizations and scientists, have really invested significant effort in reducing what we call these local impacts. The problem with global climate change, especially ocean warming and the acidification of the ocean, is that individual countries, especially the small island nations, are absolutely helpless in this regard. They cannot stave off a heat wave. They cannot build a wall around a reef to stop it from becoming more acidic. And so in my view, it's the global scale threat of climate change that's really the most urgent that we have to deal with at this point.
And as I mentioned, there's kind of these two aspects of climate change, the changing chemistry, the acidification of the ocean, and the warming of the ocean, the change in temperature. And it seems like public attention, and for that matter, even your attention and your research has shifted in recent years from really being concerned about acidification to really focusing on temperature. Why is that?
So to be clear at the outset, the ocean is becoming more acidic, measurably so. And the ocean is becoming warmer, measurably so. And both of those changes are happening at a rate that is unprecedented, at least in the time frame of the coral reefs that exist today. They have never seen changes like this in their lifespan.
Not just the lifespan. Well, what is the lifespan of an individual coral? But presumably not just in the lifespan of an individual coral or reef, but you mean the evolutionary since corals began?
Well, coral reefs have been around for 500 million years, at least. And over that time scale, coral reefs have seen massive changes. There's also been six major coral reef extinctions. And it took tens or hundreds of thousands of years for reefs to reestablish themselves. What I'm talking about right now are the coral reefs that we know today that established and evolved over the Holocene period. And the Holocene period is the last 10,000 years. So the coral reefs that we see today are best adapted to the conditions of the Holocene period prior to the Industrial Revolution.
When we think about corals, I mean, they are a tropical animal. How is heat? And it seems like a relatively small shift that we're talking about, right? A few degrees warmer than average. How is that so deadly to these corals?
That's a really good question because, as you just said, Heather, coral reefs are found mostly in warm places. Corals like it warm. So you know, it's kind of puzzling as to why if you raise the temperature just 1 degree Celsius above what corals are used to, why do they start freaking out? Why do they not like that? The answer is actually quite simple, really, and that is corals don't live alone. The corals that build coral reefs, like the Great Barrier Reef, like the Florida Reef Tract, those corals live in a intricate symbiosis with tiny single-celled algae that we call zooxanthellae. Those zooxanthellae actually live inside the cells of the coral itself, of the coral animal. And like plants on land and seaweed in the ocean, these zooxanthellae photosynthesize. They make a product called photosynthate. And photosynthate is energy rich. And they actually give it to the coral.
I mean, they're basically making food for the coral.
They are feeding the coral. So on average, the corals that build coral reefs are getting the energy that they need to build those reefs from little algae that live inside their cells.
And what happens to that relationship when they get, even as you said, just 1 degree centigrade above normal?
When the temperatures get warmer than normal, the algae start to produce toxins.
Hmm.
And the coral has to basically make a decision. Should I hang on to my algae so that I can keep getting food? Or should I kick them out to get rid of these toxins? And 99% of the time, the coral makes the decision to get rid of its algae. And this is a process called coral bleaching because the coral looks like it's turning white when it ejects its algae.
So, Ann Cohen, the last time I believe that we had you in the studio, we were in the midst of a massive bleaching event. The Great Barrier Reef was experiencing this two-year heat wave and bleaching that was really unprecedented in its scale, and concern that because bleaching means they've kicked out the algae that provide food, that that could mean massive death on the Great Barrier Reef. And let's just say your demeanor today is a little bit different. Presumably what's happened in between there is you discovered that not all reefs are dying, that the situation is not as bad as we thought it was maybe a few years ago.
The situation for coral reefs globally, because of climate change, is definitely dire. The Great Barrier Reef lost up to 83% of its coral. So millions of corals died in the 2015-2016 heat wave. And that wasn't just restricted to the Great Barrier Reef. We saw millions of corals dying on reefs across the tropical Pacific and even in the Caribbean during that event. So the situation really is dire.
I guess what I was noticing is that a few years ago, you weren't talking about reefs that could potentially survive this. And now you are. How did you even find those to begin with?
The 2015 El Nino was absolutely devastating because so many of the coral reefs that we were studying lost so many corals. I mean, one of our favorite places in the middle of the tropical Pacific, 98% of its corals died. So it was devastating. But it also gave us the opportunity to see which coral reefs were not dying. And we were on expeditions out in the tropical Pacific, out in the West Pacific, and we could see that there were coral reefs that had survived the 2015 El Nino, the 2015 heat wave. And then we have a toolkit that provides evidence for us that these coral reefs that survived this heat wave have the potential to survive further heat waves.
How? How do they do that?
There's a number of different ways. So I think what we're seeing is that nature doesn't put all its eggs in one basket. And reefs that, for example, in Thailand and in the South China Sea, what we're seeing there is that the oceanographic regime itself is protecting these coral reefs from extreme heat. So even though the ocean around Thailand and the ocean in the South China Sea got it tremendously hot in early 2015, oceanographic features, processes called internal waves, actually brought cool water onto the reefs during these heat waves, cooling the corals.
So that's
one way.
Right. So that's one way. You've got the internal waves where that reef is physically protected. Are there some corals that are genetically, biologically somehow able to actually withstand getting hotter?
Yes, there are. So another kind of super reef is one in which the corals themselves are much more thermally tolerant than the corals on neighboring reefs. So, for example, one of the coral reef systems that we work on in the Western Pacific, there are areas where the coral communities just don't bleach, even though the water temperature gets about 3 degrees hotter than usual. Or we also have another category of super reef that we found, especially in the central equatorial Pacific, where the corals do bleach and some of them do die, but they have a tremendous capacity for revival and recovery. So we saw corals dead in 2016 that revived and recovered by 2017, for example. So there are different ways of resisting or recovering from these stressful events. Because we're starting to learn the different ways that coral reefs can survive climate change, we're starting to make models so that we can get better at predicting where in the ocean we might find reefs like this. And so our next project is looking at the Marshall Islands in the Central Pacific as a potential super reef site.
Why the Marshall Islands in particular?
The goal of the super reefs program is to protect those coral reefs that can potentially survive the next heat wave and the next one and the next one as the ocean becomes warmer and warmer over the next few decades. The last thing we want to happen is have these tremendously thermally tolerant or climate resilient reefs that can survive climate change get dynamited by folks looking for fish or get dredged to build a harbor or blown up to create rubble for a hotel. We want to preserve these reefs that are going to survive climate change. We're working very closely with a conservation organization called the Nature Conservancy, which already has a plan to establish protections in the Marshall Islands. What we want to do is make sure that the super reefs in the Marshall Islands are protected within that plan.
And when we protect these particular reefs, what is the end goal of that protection? Is it essentially going to become like corals in zoos? These are the last 12 or 25 reefs that we have? Or is the thinking that they could naturally help other reefs? Or are we going to learn from them how to go engineer more resilient reefs in other places? How does it move forward?
Probably all of those. Our immediate goal is to create a network of super reef sites across the tropical oceans. And by a network, we mean super reefs as many as possible. And ideally, those reefs will be connected with each other by ocean currents and with other reef systems. And if we can protect those super reefs, and these aren't just 12 or 13 corals. I mean, these are hundreds, thousands of corals across kilometers of reef tract that we're talking about. They will produce millions and millions of larvae. And these larvae will travel on the ocean currents and settle on far-flung neighboring reefs and revive those reefs over time. So that's the immediate goal, is to protect these reefs so that nature can do its work.
That's the immediate goal. What about long term? I mean, can that natural process be expected to maintain what we currently know in terms of where and how many corals we have? Or will that require, or would that require, human intervention, additional human intervention?
If we can locate and protect enough super reefs representing the full diversity of coral reefs as we know them today. I mean, there are 850 plus species of hard corals alone. If we can protect representative reefs and establish networks across the global tropics soon enough, then yes, I believe that nature will restore the devastated reefs and even some areas come back more thermally tolerant than they were before. But humans can also accelerate this process. So I also believe that there is room in the strategy for assisting corals with genetic engineering. So in the lab, engineering more climate-resistant corals that can deal with high temperatures, that can deal with ocean acidification. There are also efforts underway to identify thermally tolerant corals and farm them. Mm. So basically, it would be accelerating what nature is already doing. I say there is room for that in a multi-pronged strategy to ensure that coral reefs don't go extinct, because that's pretty much what we're facing right now. I don't believe that we can rely on human intervention alone, at least the genetic engineering and the coral farming alone, because those efforts are massively expensive. In some instances, we're just not there with the science at this point. And we cannot build reefs on the scale that nature can do it. We can build zoos, but we cannot build the Great Barrier Reef.
Ann Cohen is an associate scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. She's leading the new Super Reefs Initiative. Ann, thank you and best of luck.
Thank you so much, Heather.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.